Order the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. For the purpose of taking public testimony and opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 5524, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, the way that we have decided to do this today is to allow Mr. Farrow and his team to finish their presentation. And then three groups indicated to me a desire to speak during the public comment period. If there is anyone else, I would do have a sign-up sheet. I would invite you to sign the sign-up sheet so that we can manage the time appropriately. And any opening comments from the panel? Any comments from the staff?
Madam Chair, you'll notice you have a big pile of stuff in front of you this morning. The burgundy binder is answers to questions that were asked yesterday. There is also a memo in your pile that has a little State of Oregon and the OLCC in the top left. These are responses to questions that were asked during the agency's overview a couple of weeks ago. And I should have gotten those to you sooner, but here they are. There's also a copy of Senate Bill 184, which is the bill which affects... accomplishes the transfer of revenue from OLCC to DHS for the alcohol and drug treatment package. So, with that, that's all I've got.
All right. There's being no other comments. Mr. Farrow, welcome back for day two.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much. For the record, I'm Steve Farrow, director of the OLCC. And at this time, we have Director Gnowski. She's going to make some comments. There was quite a bit of conversation and testimony about some of the products that might entice underage drinkers, and we're going to talk about that and how it can affect the system by having more inspectors out there. So, Linda.
Thank you.
I acknowledge Mr. Upadhyaya, who's here from BAM today. Good afternoon.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Linda Gnowski, the Enforcement Director at the Commission, and I have a couple things I'd like to talk about. The first point is just a clarification on the background checks. We talked about being able to do criminal background checks and licensing, and just a clarification on that. I did some research and digging last night, and we found out that it really isn't by state that that's a regulation, that the National Crime Information Center can only be used for enforcement and criminal investigation. That is the U.S. code set by Congress. And so there is no way we can use it without literally an act of Congress to use it for licensing. So there's a clarification on that. The other thing is that I wanted to clarify, I think there might have been some confusion about the reason for the additional enforcement staff. So I'd just like to expand on that just a little bit today. If I gave the impression that these enforcement people were only for underage drinking, that isn't the purpose of it. It is one important part of what we do. But our inspectors are responsible for the whole range of liquor laws that are on the book, which, you know, relates from food service permits, financial assistance, tight house issues to visibly intoxicated persons and underage drinking and furnishing. So it's a wide range. And so we're asking for the staff to be able to address all the areas of the liquor laws of the state, and all of them hit public safety in some component or other. We talked about a little bit about some of the things that the OLCC can do to affect underage drinking. One small component is product restrictions. And this is one example that is they kind of liquefied out. These are Jell-O shots. I don't know if you've heard of Jell-O shots. They're made of alcohol and made into a gelatin form, so they look like Jell-O. But they have alcohol in them. This is a product that we banned from Oregon. We felt it was geared towards minors, and we said it was not appropriate for us to be here. I do have, I think you have some information. And as promised, I brought you a sample of the spikes.
You house guys won't be able to keep that.
Probably worth more than 10 bucks.
I don't know if I've broken any rules about bringing alcohol into the Capitol.
You
but
probably.
I'm looking to see if we have a state police officer in the back of the room.
But I wanted you to actually see what we're dealing with on a regular basis in the industry. The industry is very innovative, and one of the components is trying to find these products and determine if they're appropriate. And they do look like either a fingernail polish bottle or a mouthwash you get at a hotel. Mouthwash at a hotel. This has 12% alcohol in it, and these are called spikes. And these we are looking at, and which is good news that I just heard last night, is that the wholesalers finally realized, I looked at this, and the distributors have decided to pull this product from the shelves of the grocery stores. You're absolutely welcome to keep one. It's a sample.
Is it under $10?
Yes.
Ms. Ignowski only pulled it in Oregon, or is this the last we're going to see of this nationally?
This is only in Oregon. Our own Oregon distributors have decided this was a bad idea, and that they have willingly, voluntarily going to be pulling this from the shelves immediately. And so we don't see this. I guess there was comments this was a test market for this product. And so I went and found some today for you, and it was at a 7-Eleven. Right by my neighborhood in Clackamas County. So it's all over the place. So
Clackamas County. Great title, spicy mango, hot chocolate. These are carried on.
But these have supposed to be a caffeine kick with a little hot, and I gave you some literature on it a little bit. But I also wanted to show you some of the other things. The second one on the second page is really a gross name. It's called Second Blow. This one hasn't made Oregon's market yet. We're hoping it won't make Oregon's market. If it does, we will ban this one, too. This is a gelatin shot that has an innovative way of consuming it. One sucks and the other one blows. So that's where the name came from. It's a malt base. This one I have in front of me, the third page, it's this Wet Willy. It's a jello shot. We have already banned this one, and it comes in several shots. And then the last page, it's called Freaky Ice. Looks very much like an Autopop. It's a frozen drink, frozen thing just like an Autopop. These we also banned from Oregon. These are the things that are attracted to underage kids, and these are the things that we're concerned about. So these, this is one part of the enforcement that OLC does, to try to be responsible and trying to keep these type of products out of the market in Oregon because they are enticing to young people. We do a lot of other things just by rejecting. We oversee some advertising because you notice we don't advertise any distilled spirits sales outside of the store. You just don't see that in Oregon. Our mantra has always been moderation and temperance, and so we're very careful about how alcohol is advertised in the state. And literally, distilled spirits is not advertised as selling. But we also cite minors. We go to cake parties. We help police with house parties and try to cite minors. But one of the key things that I wanted to make about minors is that I know there's a great deal of concern about education. I think people should be educated on the ills and the effects of minors drinking alcohol. But unless you have an enforcement part, a consequence for the laws in our state, if they're not enforced, they mean nothing. And if there isn't a consequence to a law, then what makes people want to abide by it? It's just like if you knew there were no state police on I-5, how many people would stay within the speed limit when you knew you would never get caught? It's that kind of same thing as that if you know there's no enforcement, there's no consequences, people are just going to do what they want to do. And our enforcement strategies is trying to make the consequences. We try to do some education, but there's other entities in the state of Oregon that have a better access to maybe the eighth graders and sixth graders to do the education, working with parents. And we all have a part in dealing with the underage drinking problem in the state. OLCC cannot solve underage drinking in the state of Oregon. That's just a fact. It's too big for us. Underage drinking starts with parents and the values and the homes, and I can't have a real impact on that. And we don't want to duplicate efforts of agencies in the state. We have valuable resources. We can't be duplicating efforts. And so we're all taking a piece of the pie a piece of the solution in trying to make a difference in this whole area of underage drinking. But I just wanted to make sure that these staff that we're asking for is going to do a lot more than just underage drinking. They have to deal with physically intoxicated persons. These create a lot of crashes in our state. As we know, abuse of alcohol causes domestic violence and causes rape, fights, riots, and so these are all the things we're working on in our premises. So our staff is dealing with a wide range of issues that happen in our licensed premises, and we're just asking for more staff to be able to affect even all areas of the alcohol consumption and sale in Oregon to be more effective and hopefully prevent the tragedies that happen from the abuse of alcohol. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Senator Whitson.
Thank you. More of a comment. I just wanted to point out that this 51-ounce bottle of mouthwash has 11 ounces of alcohol in it. It's 21.6%. It's the same amount of alcohol that's in a fifth of Jim Beam at 86 proof. Same amount. This costs $2.52 at the grocery store. So I understand that you don't enforce products that aren't supposedly edible, but this is designed to wash your mouth out with. And so I would encourage you to look into who if anyone, actually looks into these products. And then the second point, you were talking about the criminal check. In the rental housing industry, we've had, for years, we've had the available a credit check or a civil criminal check and a civil court check and a criminal history check. We used to be able to get that for about $21, and that would not give you the details on the civil or the criminal history, but you could get it for additional money, but it would alert you if there was a problem. I wondered if that's a possibility that you could be using and bypass the legality of the issue, as long as you have permission of the prospective employee, you can run those checks.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitson, absolutely. There are private companies that provide that service, and that is something that we're looking into and seeing if it's cost-effective for us to do that. We do have statutory authority to fingerprint licensees who are for applying for on-premises. We've never instituted that because of the cost of doing fingerprinting. But that's something also the commission can look at. But it only deals with the licensees for on-premises. It won't deal with anybody else, the package stores. And so absolutely we're looking at the private companies and providing that information.
Okay, Mr. Farrell, before you begin, just administratively, last night we only had 3 people that wanted to testify. We now have 7. And so I'm going to ask the committee to hold their questions. Mr. Farrell, you to race through the rest of your presentation, and I want to leave opportunity for the people that have come and signed up to testify.
Appreciate that, Madam Chair.
Is that acceptable to everybody? Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitson, with regards to the mouthwash, there is ORS 471035 that basically exempts us from dealing with that. But your question was, who would take a look at that? That we will find out and get back to you on. And lastly, as far as comments from me, there was a question yesterday brought up about the performance rate as far as compliance for service to minors. We had it at 73. There was comment made that it should be 100. We recognize that comment is very valid. Just to give you some background, we worked with in the past Oregon Progress Board helped give us guidance on how to set these performance measures. Now, certainly, if the committee so directs us, we would be more than happy to explore moving that measurement, that performance measurement. But I just wanted to go ahead and make sure that the committee knew that in consultation with the Oregon Progress Board is how we went through setting that 73% as far as a target, and that the basic guidance is set it incrementally so that it's achievable over time and not just one big leap. But once again, if the committee is interested in us exploring or going to that 100% as far as a target, we would be more than happy to entertain that. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Just briefly to that point, I don't care what your target is. I want compliance up in the 90s. And I want you to take the action that you need. If you need more staff, tell us you need more staff to do more monitoring, because I think 70 or 73% is absolutely unacceptable. That means there's way too many hundreds of stores that are selling to the minors on a regular basis, and that's unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable. So I want compliance up, and that may mean that you may have to toughen your rules. I think if somebody is caught selling to minor once, you fine them heavily. Second time, you pull their license. And then you'd get compliance real quick.
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, duly noted. And certainly one of the things that we have within our packages that we're asking for is additional compliance investigators. And we will continue to pursue this. We very much appreciate that comment. And we'll go ahead and use that to the best of our ability to go ahead and see that we meet that 100% compliance as soon as possible.
Okay. So you're done with your presentation?
Madam Chair, we're finished.
Well, you're great Americans. I wouldn't have cut the committee off so fast with any questions. Anybody have any concluding questions before we start public testimony? Representative Tomei.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I just want to, echo what Senator Monroe is saying. I certainly believe we need 100% compliance, and I guess I'm uncomfortable with the position that it's not OLCC's responsibility to make sure that minors don't drink. I think it is, and in one of your flyers we have a picture. Well, here it is, a picture of all the alcohol that was an OLCC inspector found with state law in Central Oregon Public Resort Area. I mean, there's just case after case after case. That is totally unacceptable. And I think OLCC needs to take, if public safety is one of your goals and you state that it is, certainly children drinking should be included in that as one of your primary goals, to diminish the number of children drinking, the number of children drinking and driving.
Alex, you'll have the opportunity to look at their performance measures, and we'll have, I'm sure, a vigorous debate when it comes time to either accept or decline on some of their performance measures. Mr. Farrell, if you'd like to respond, then we're going to start public testimony.
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, we absolutely recognize it is our responsibility to deal with underage drinking. We will pursue it in many different ways, whether education or whatever manner that we are allowed and supported in. That's one of the reasons certainly we're sitting before you asking for those resources to do that very thing.
Okay. Representative Edwards.
Brief follow-up to Representative Tomei's question. Is there a direct correlation between the number of inspectors and the incidence of underage drinking? In other words, can you give the committee some guidance in terms of the number of potential additional FTE we would need in order to raise the performance measure?
Chairman Johnson, Representative Edwards, my name is Farshad Aladadi. I'm the research analyst with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head, but I can provide you with some evidence from minor decoy operations conducted in California that showed that with the expansion of program resources, they did see a decline in the, or actually increase in the compliance rate. And I'll get that for the committee when we're done.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. We're going to take testimony. We have seven people signed up. I'm going to take them in the order in which they've signed up, because no one lives more than 100 miles. I'm going to hold you to 10 minutes. Mr. Koba, you and whoever you have brought with you are up to bat first. Mr. Sellers, you're on deck, so you might be thinking about your comments.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson and members of the committee. I'm John Firestein, president of the Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon and a liquor agent for 10 years. Thank you for this opportunity to present our top priority for the 2007 session, an increase in agent expense reimbursement, or more commonly known as agent compensation.
Can I stop you for just a second? Are you going to read this whole thing to us?
I don't have to.
That would be lovely.
Okay. I'll stop the first paragraph. Is that okay?
That'd be fine.
Well, we are very disappointed and frustrated that the study on agent compensation that was outlined in the budget note in the 2005-07 OLCC budget is nowhere close to being finalized, We look forward to its proper and timely conclusion. If it is done in time for consideration this session, we will work with you to implement the findings. In case, as is expected, it is not final prior to sine die, we ask this committee to consider and act upon an increase in agents' expense reimbursement from the current 8.88 to 10.5% with a true-up in the 2008 session based upon the study results. In addition, we propose a biennial cost of living increase be added to ensure agents stay current with increased expenses. We are hopeful at the close of our comments this afternoon, you'll better understand the value of the investment in liquor agents. Thank you very much.
And I don't want to truncate your ability to tell your story. I just didn't want us to sit here and have you read to us. Maybe you'd turn to your colleague and summarize the remainder.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Marshall Koba, representing Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon. I think there's an interesting little chronology on page two about the history of some of this debate. I've had the pleasure of working with the liquor agents for the last three sessions. This is my third session. And if you go back and understand this discussion, it's been a historical discussion. I'm sure Senator Monroe, when he was here last time, maybe even had some of this. But you can look at the 1992 and 1997 slight bumps, 2000. There's increasing expectations of liquor agents, and I think it's fascinating that as we begin to discuss $1 billion in sales for the OLCC, $1 billion in liquor sales with the increase, and that's potentially possible in the next biennium, that it's all being run through liquor stores, and that we have continued to have the discussion about are we adequately compensated for the adequate staff, for the adequate training, for the adequate people that are making this not a temporary job, but people that are selling the final product. And I know there's been a lot of discussion here in the last 2 days about selling alcohol to minors, but the truth of the matter is that, and oftentimes the people that are making that final sale to the end consumer are minimum wage, part-time, low benefit or no benefit employees, and that's the situation that we find ourselves in. And I'm not suggesting that liquor stores are selling alcohol to minors, but that there's an opportunity here, I think, with increased compensation to make it more of a career opportunity for some of these people. And right now that's one of the frustrations we have, is that we've got a lot of low pay employees working at liquor stores. If you can see, there's been some things that have moved in the right direction for us over the year. In 2000, there was a booklet that came out from the OLCC, which has a business plan looking for bigger, brighter, better location stores. Again, all of that. I've got a number of situations of our members who would love to move across town. The community that they're in and the liquor store that they're in isn't in the best location that maybe it could be. But to move across and to pay the additional rents is a significant investment and a significant increase in cost. And there's no guarantee that they're going to recoup those costs through increased sales. So that booklet, we support everything that was in the 2000 OLCC, a retail business plan for the year 2000 and beyond. It's going to take investment in resources to do that. In 2003, there was a task force that was appointed by Governor Kitzhaber. They came out with 13 conclusions. Number two conclusion, increase in agent compensation. So we've had a slight increase in 03. The 05, we were really looking forward to the outcome of the study. And to say that there's frustration among the ranks is an understatement. And, we come here on February 5th. If you're not familiar with the study, there was a budget note in the 05-07 study that said there would be an agent compensation study, basically looking at the rate of return. Are we fairly compensated? And that's kind of been the discussion that's gone on for years here. Are we fairly compensated? And that study, we put hundreds of man hours into that as agents to work with the OLCC to put together the RFP. The RFP went out. They had two responses. They negotiated with the one responder up until early mid-December, if I understand the timing. Could be off 20, 30 days. They couldn't finalize the deal. Went to responder number two, and that's where we find ourselves. So if that contract has been signed, it's been signed within the last week, and the outcome is due 1st of June, end of June. I understand we're going to sign a die at the end of June.
Mr. Koba, rather than have you speculate on the status of the contract when we're done with the public testimony, I'm going to invite Mr. Farrell back up. Mr. Farrell inherited the contract, so he is operating at a bit of a deficit, but I would prefer to rely on the facts, not speculation.
Certainly.
Okay. Senator Whitsitt, Senator Monroe, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Marshall, we've seen that the percent of sales, this is on the percent of sales, right?
That's correct.
We've seen that the sales have really increased dramatically over the last few years and quite dramatically. and you just suggested that many of the employees are minimum wage employees. So I wonder if we could get some kind of a graphic or an explanation of why the expenses of the liquor store agents are in their locations are increasing more rapidly than the revenue stream generated from a fixed percent of their sales against a growing sales paradigm.
Chair Johnson, Senator Witsit, would be happy to get you any information. We put some information together, I think, back in the 03 session, which we thought clearly showed some of the difficulties that we're having in keeping up. And there's no question, sales are increasing. I think every sale has a cost. And in addition to the increasing cost of rent, cost of payroll, cost of any insurances that we might have on the business or on the employees or any retirement, if we were to have that, then there's some significant costs. I'd be happy to put that together and get it to you.
Very helpful.
Senator Monroe?
Yeah, I had a similar question. I would like to see numbers on how much a typical Greenfront store takes in terms of profits and what the people are actually paid typically, those kinds of things. I know some of these are basically sole proprietorships, and sometimes some of the stores are actually run by like a family, a husband and a wife, and maybe they have another employee or maybe not, you know. So give me some numbers. You made a strong case, but for me, I have to have the numbers. And the other thing is, do you happen to know what your rate of compliance is in terms of selling to minors? What the percentage of compliance for the Greenfront stores is?
I can tell you, Senator, it's a hell of a lot better than 73%.
I suspect it's
in the very, very high 90s, and that's based on the liquor agents that I talk to weekly.
That's what I would suspect as well, but I just wondered if you had a number for me.
I don't know.
I don't think you are the problem when it comes to selling to minors. I think others are.
I think we'll have Mr. Farrow describe the elements of what would be included in the study. That would be very helpful, and I'm putting you on notice. Representative Edwards, we'll come back to you in a second. Representative Edwards, then Representative Tomei, then I'm going to move us along.
My colleagues from the Senate essentially asked my question. I would prefer the numbers show up in terms of average net profit by agent, and I'd like to see a trend line over the last, say, 10 years.
Representative Tillman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were hearing before about how the public is wanting more expensive products. So we heard about, an $8,000 bottle of brandy yesterday. So it doesn't cost any more for your agent to sell an $8,000 bottle than it does a $2 pint of rot gut. So I guess I'd like to have more information about that, too.
Representative, in my situation in East Portland, we do absolutely see a trend toward a higher-end product, but the volume products are outpacing even the higher-end products. There's a lot more handling being lower volume, so consequently the case sales are a lot more on lower-end product. My customer is a blue-collar customer, so consequently I deal in a lot of low-end liquor.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Kobe, you get the last word.
Thank you, Senator Johnson and Chair Monroe and Representative Edwards. I think the frustration that we bring here on a February 6th is the answer to the question. We were hopeful coming out of the 05 session we would be sitting here today with results from a study that would do exactly that. And so what you have here today are liquor agents saying we're not paid enough and we don't have the facts to back it up. And it's we find ourselves in the same situation we've been in for a long time. And we look forward to working with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Next up, Mr. Sellers and on deck Judy Cushing. Yes. Well, you get extra style points for speeding us along. And yeah, he's here, though, and is asked to testify. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Madam. My name is Greg Sellers. I'm with Future Brands LLC. I represent Beam Global Spirits and Wine and Absolute Spirits Company.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jay Nelson. I am president of Young's Market Company. We are an Oregon liquor brokerage firm. So,
whatever order you two are happy with.
We wanted to come before the committee today in full support of the entire package that OLCC has presented before you. I think in the last year, the improvement that has happened to OLCC in moving the business forward, the profits forward, the whole system forward has just been tremendous. Industry across the board is very, very happy with what is going on at OLCC, the progression to the new warehouses, the systems, everything is just helping to move the business forward, and it's really bringing Oregon back up to where it really needs to be across, you know, throughout the United States. Administration listens to things with open ears. They are very, very open to change, very open to suggestion. They have taken some new opinions and some new ideas and really helped move the business forward. It's a breath of fresh air, and it's very, very nice to have. One other thing that I wanted to add in here as we're going through this, you know, agents' compensation, as you're talking with this is something that, you know, we've supported in here, and that's part of something that's coming down the line. But something to add with this thing is we as suppliers, there are new items coming, and these stores are constantly adding on new items. There's an incredible amount of products to be handled in these stores. Stores need to expand. Costs keep going up. It's, you know, yeah, sales are going up, but costs do keep going up. And long-term with this, we do support increased agent compensation, better locations. It just helps the whole business along. And one last comment as I was sitting here listening is on compliance. I handle Oregon, Southern Washington, and I also have Alaska. And you make a lot of comments back at compliance for the liquor stores, for grocery stores or something for selling alcohol. I think you need to take another look at this thing. You need to put a little stiffer teeth in the laws for the person that's trying to purchase. In Alaska, it's a $1,000 fine. If you try to enter a bar with a fake ID, if they catch you, you get tagged along with the people. If you're going to bring this thing back to the compliance rate, it can't be just one person doing it. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Sellers? Representative Hannah.
Mr. Sellers, you mentioned increasing profit. In what context were you bringing that comment?
Increase in profit across the board. We're tend, you know, the business now is tend to go to the higher end products. So it's if you're making 10% on a $5 item, you know, it just makes sense that if you're making profit on a $10 item, that's fine. But it's the amount of those products that's being sold. It's
Can I follow up,
Representative.
So is that a difference in your product mix towards the higher end?
It is. Yes. Yes.
Follow up, Mr. Hannah.
So, can you substantiate that with your sales records to OLCC that show that that a higher percentage of higher end items, that you're having more growth in higher end?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a report that comes out. It's called the NABCA. It's National Alcohol Beverage Control Association. And we get these forms in there, and it, you know, we can substantiate everything we're saying here right now.
One more follow-up. I can see it in
you.
Got it,
Blake. Madam Chair, I would just ask that we might be provided that because that would seem contrary to what we have heard you already. So I'd just like to true up the data.
Mr. Sellers, can you provide the committee with that?
I can provide you with that.
That would be just lovely. You can either get it to my office, and I'll make sure the professional staff has it, and they disseminate it to the whole panel, or you could send it to Representative Hannah, and we'll ask that he extend the same courtesy to the panel.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Does that conclude? Any other questions for Mr. Sellers? Okay, thank you. Mr. Nelson, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. My comments will be short. I've been dealing with this state agency for well over 30 years, and obviously Greg and I represent the industry, so we are very interested in the operational aspect of the Liquor Commission. We just came through a record year in sales for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and that generated record profits as well. This last year was probably the smoothest, most well-executed year that we have ever experienced. Holidays period is approximately when we do 40% of our business, and every year we have some major glitch. This year The staff bent over backwards. They accommodated all of the quirks that we could throw at them. And we had an outstanding year, an outstanding season. So, again, we are here to support the commission operationally, as well as their full budget package.
Any question for Mr. Nelson? Thank you very much for joining us today, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you, Senator.
We invite up now Judy Cushing and on deck, Ms. Botkin. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson and members of the committee. Thank you so much for inviting me to testify before you this afternoon. My name is Judy Cushing, and I'm President and CEO of the Oregon Partnership, a statewide nonprofit dedicated to alcohol and drug prevention and treatment referral. Oregon Partnership wholeheartedly supports the request of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for additional inspectors to help us reduce underage sales to minors as well as over consumption and other problems related to alcohol beverage service. As you may know, Oregon Partnership has been a really strong advocate to combat underage drinking in this state, and unfortunately and tragically, Oregon has a very high underage drinking rate. In fact, our young girls, our 8th grade girls, 1 in 3 of Oregon's 8th grade girls has consumed alcohol in the last 30 days. And we've got to stop the trend because, unfortunately, the trend has been going in the wrong direction. That's not by accident. I had the honor of sitting on the National Academy of Sciences panel that spent 3 years looking at the underage drinking problem in this country, and we heard from researchers and scientists in the alcohol industry and those who work in this arena full time. And it was really clear. One of the chapters in the landmark report has to do with access and availability of alcohol to minors. And we know when we focus on reducing access and availability, underage drinking goes down. The research is very clear about that. In the last couple of months, Oregon Partnership, in collaboration with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and Multnomah County law enforcement, conducted a minor decoy operation in Multnomah County. And unfortunately, one-fourth of the stores, restaurants, bars, and taverns served alcohol to minors. Does this mean that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission isn't doing their job? No. It means that there aren't nearly enough inspectors. While the number of licensees has risen dramatically over the last couple of years, the number of OLCC inspectors has dropped because of budget constraints. In the Oregon Healthy Teens Survey of high school teens that's conducted every other year, high schoolers tell us it's extremely easy for them to get alcohol. We need to provide OLCC the resources so that they can help retailers and restaurants comply with Oregon's existing laws that are on the books, and even more importantly, send the message to young people who are of underage in this state that we do have laws in this state about underage drinking, and our state is going to uphold those laws through liquor inspectors and through OLCC working with local law enforcement. We think that the dramatic impact that budget cutbacks that OLCC has experienced in the last years really is being reflected in some of the problems we're seeing in local communities and around underage drinking. We want to see the underage drinking rates go down, and we know they will. We want to reverse the trend, and we really urge you to support the OLCC's budget in this arena. I also want to make a comment about spikes. 10 days ago, Pamela Erickson, who used to be the administrator of the OLCC, was in Bend visiting her mother, and she happened into a 7-Eleven, and there was a huge barrel of these cute little bottles sitting beside the checkout stand, and she picked one up, and she looked at it, and couldn't believe what she was seeing, and she looked at the 12% content of alcohol, and because Pamela focuses in our office on underage drinking issues, she thought, oh my gosh. She bought every flavor she could and brought it back to the office, and we put out an alert through our system, and you may have seen the story last week on the news. This is the very kind of product we're seeing come into our marketplace or about to come into our marketplace about once a month. If we didn't have an OLCC, we wouldn't be able to keep up with it. We simply couldn't. Now, in this case, we're really pleased that the Oregon beer and wine distributors and wholesalers have decided to pull the product from the market. But we're going to be continue to be bombarded with things. Kids, 99 cents a bottle. Put this in their backpack, in their pocket, and spike their soft drink or their illegally purchased or gotten beer. We've got to keep this stuff out of the hands of kids, and it takes a collaborative partnership, and OLCC is critical in this effort. I also want to mention that you have before you some testimony from Stephanie Suarez Pump, who is the co-chair of the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Addiction. Stephanie believed that this testimony, public testimony, was going to be heard yesterday and was here to testify, had a conflict this afternoon, so she submitted written testimony. But the Governor's Council on Alcohol and Drug Addiction feels very, very strongly about this issue. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cushing, for compelling testimony. And would you apologize on behalf of the committee to Ms. Pump? I'm sorry that she came and wasn't heard. Any questions for Ms. Cushing? Senator Verger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cushing, what is the differential across the nation in age for being able to buy alcohol?
It's most states have the majority of states have a 21 age drinking limit. In other words, anyone 21 or over. Is that what you're asking?
That's what I'm asking.
Yes. Some states have an age of 18.
18. Do you happen to know the states that have the age of 18?
I can't cite those states. There are probably people in this room that can, but we can get that information for you. I can have it for you by the end of the day.
I just am concerned sometimes about when we're talking about underage that we really know exactly who we're talking about. Eighth grade girls is one thing. 16-year-old boys and girls in high school is another. 21-year-old, 20-year-old, 20-year-old young man getting ready to go into the service is another. So I just I think sometimes when we say underage drinking, we all have this visual scene of this child, this high school student or this middle school student in the underage. So I would be curious as to which states have 18.
There are some other issues related to the different ages of drinking that are scientific in nature, and we know a lot more today than we did even 5-8 years ago about what happens to the adolescent brain and what happens to the teen brain when you begin drinking before the age of 21. And when we began to get into the areas of those 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, there may be a perception that, it's a rite of passage. They're about to be able to, or they can vote and they can do other things. Why shouldn't they be able to drink? But the fact is that the developing brain is impacted negatively when you began drinking at those ages, even when you began drinking in the late teen years. We're learning more and more. We know that when kids start drinking at 15 years or earlier, they're 4 times more likely to become addicted to alcohol. We also know that the young mind of a teenager in their late teen years is also impacted negatively. And we can begin to provide you some of that information as well. But I'd be happy to get you the states and their drinking age.
Follow-up, Senator Verger.
I do not give alcohol drinking below the proper age in Oregon my good housekeeping stamp of approval.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
This is coming from someone whose state invented the Go Cup. So.
Yeah.
So, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judy, in your written testimony, you indicate OLCC has suffered from significant staff reductions. I'm wondering if your numbers are different than LFO. I'm looking at the LFO analysis. 03 was 213, 05, 07 was 224, and the request is for 238.
What I intended to convey in that statement, relative to the number of licensees, it's my understanding that in the last year there have been 2,000 additional licensees or licenses. Some of those are renewals, but a lot of those are new. When the percentages of inspectors don't keep up with the percentages of licensees, then there's no way to maintain compliance.
Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions for Ms. Cushing? Thank you very much. While Ms. Botkin makes her way up here, I have returned the sign-in sheet to the desk. If anyone feels the spirit of testimony moving in them, please sign the sign-up sheet now.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and we represent over 200 employees at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And I can tell you that in the 20-plus years that I have represented these individuals here at the legislature and had the honor of working with them, I can tell you that there's no word in the title of this agency that they take more seriously than control. One of the frustrations that we have had was alluded to by the earlier testimony by Ms. Cushing, and that is that we have seen licensing rise exponentially and enforcement stay flat. The concerns that we have over underage drinking is accentuated by the fact that many of our liquor inspectors and enforcement officers are actually members of Mad Mothers and actively participate in efforts to control underage drinking. The agency has received sort of mixed signals in the past. There has been a heavy emphasis on selling and marketing and a lower emphasis on control and enforcement and oversight. I would say that probably 95% of the folks in this state who have liquor licenses take those licenses very seriously and exert the kind of control that we expect them to exert, there certainly are no numbers to prove that. We know that most of our establishments are very responsible, and that they go through the process of making sure that they're serving only to legally aged drinkers. At the same time, we know kids are getting their alcohol from somewhere. What we don't know is where. We all have suspicions. I have suspicions. I can tell you where we got it when we were kids, and it wasn't from a liquor store. You know, I can tell you that we probably got it, you know, my husband got his out of his dad's liquor cabinet. You know, I know where we got it. The question is, where are they getting it now? And we weren't 13 years old. We were not eighth graders. And it is concerning to me that 1 in 3 eighth grade girls are drinking. That is a concern to me. But the bigger concern is, why are they drinking? And that's not our job, unfortunately, at OLCC. But I think that you have the opportunity to challenge OLCC to partner with the Department of Human Resources to find out what's going on. Because the Department of Human Resources are the ones who ought to know where the problems are arising. And as we challenge OLCC, we also need to challenge local law enforcement. And what we can do at OLCC is we can partner with local law enforcement, we can partner with the schools, and we can come up with programs, but we haven't had the resources till now. And if this body is serious about wanting to get a handle on this, then we don't need a lot of resources, but we need some. And I think that if you challenge OLCC to take this on and give them the resources they need to do it, then they will. And I think everybody at OLCC is ready to step up to that plate. For years, I have watched the employees out there step up to every challenge that's been given to them. Unfortunately, most of the challenges have been related to increased sales, increased marketing, and moving the product faster. We've done all those things. Now it's time for us to sort of go onto the other side of the agency, which is enforcement, oversight, and holding people accountable for very poor decisions. And, you know, one dead kid on the highway is one too many. It's never okay. It's never okay. So I agree with you, Senator Monroe. 100% compliance is probably not obtainable. because kids are very innovative, but, you know, we ought to make them work at it. And we ought to make them work at it all the time. We should never make it easy for them to get alcohol into their system. And, Senator Whitsitt, please don't make us watch over mouthwash. I'm thinking about an additional warehouse filled with mouthwash, and I just, you know. Anyway, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, Mary, you know what the fine levels and the compliance levels are when somebody is found to have sold to minors. Do you think those penalties are strict enough for first offense, second offense, third offense? Also, penalties for the person who is illegally trying to buy with fake ID or something like that. Can you comment on whether those penalties ought to be more severe?
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, you know, you're talking to a non-drinking mom. You know, we didn't drink at our house when we were raising our son, and he doesn't drink to this day to speak of. You know, he's one of the truck drivers that you can be assured is not drunk behind the wheel. I'm a bit of a hard ass on this stuff.
That's a technical term.
I would find the kid who's trying to buy. I think there has to be consequences for bad behavior. And the consequences don't have to be as hard as they have to be sure. And, you know, a $25 fine to an eighth grade girl is huge. It's huge.
You get it from daddy.
You know, well, shame on dad then.
Yeah.
Then you ought to find dad as well. I mean, dad shouldn't bail her out because there has to be consequences. And whether it's consequences for drunk driving or consequences for trying to obtain alcohol when you're too young to have it, there should be consequences and the fine should be severe. And good retailers should be rewarded and encouraged and assisted in everything we can do to help them do a better job. And bad retailers ought to lose their license. It's just that simple. There doesn't seem to be a lot of gray here. There's a lot of money to be made in alcohol. We don't have to sell to kids to make it.
I've got a question for you. I'm just curious about the poor unsuspecting clerk who's in Safeway, just finished a 12-hour shift, called in to work additional overtime. She's got 12 people in the line behind her. She has an old-looking kid come up, very brilliantly done fake ID that you can make on any kind of Xerox machine right now. Would your very stringent standards apply to that poor overworked person in Safeway?
Only if she'd been trained. And right now, she's not. And until we have the ability to offer every clerk that is responsible for selling alcohol in a grocery store or a convenience store, until we have the ability to train each and every one of them through our training programs at OLCC, then I think that taking somebody's livelihood away from them when they have not had an opportunity to be trained to identify false ID, to know what, you know, I mean, we have training. We just don't make it available to the clerks because there's no budget for it, and there doesn't seem to be an ability to do it on the job.
I was very appreciative for the expeditious response from OLCC, particularly including their stakeholders, and I wanted to just probe with you whether or not you have the opportunity to share your opinion in stakeholders' meetings with OLCC with respect to training, how to expedite training, how to make good training available. I think back in my old life when we had to recertify every 6 months and we were allowed to take computer tests with correct to 100 on them, and you might sit there for 2 days trying to get the correct to 100, but it was good enough certification for the FAA. God, how soon they forget. and whether or not you would see a role for that kind of training, given that I know you have some expertise in training.
I think that I worked with Jeff Anderson from the United Food and Commercial Workers, who represents grocery store clerks, and OLCC in trying to develop some new language in law. And I know that Representative Witt is sort of moving forward on that as well. And I would always bow to the needs of the union that represents those workers and whatever they come up with their employers. But I do think that OLCC is trying to come up with some kind of a computerized training program that will be made available to the clerks. I have to tell you, you know, this thing about holding them criminally responsible when they receive no training seems very harsh to me. You know, once they've been trained, I treat them harshly. But to not have them trained and to treat them harshly, I think, you know, I'm hoping that Representative Witt's bill passes and that there is some training made available for those clerks this session.
Any concluding questions for Ms. Botkin? Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. I'd invite up Mr. Douglas, and on deck is Mr. Romaine. Good afternoon, Mr. Douglas.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, representing Diageo. Diageo is the world's largest beverage company. Some of those beverages include Guinness beer, BV wine, Crown Royal, Johnny Walker, Bailey's, and others. I was also pleased to represent Diageo on the Attorney General's Task Force Against Underage Drinking, and I'm pleased that work did generate some legislation, and some of those bills have already moved out of the House Judiciary Committee, so there will be a chance to address those issues. In no small part to actions of past legislatures and good administration through OLCC, the state has seen an increase in revenue. We feel good about the current administration, the current budget package, the commission, the director, and the staff, and we are supportive of that budget package today. Happy. That's it.
I expected 45 minutes of prepared testimony. Any questions for Mr. Douglas?
He's learning.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Douglas. Mr. Romaine is coming forward, and on deck is Mary Stewart.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. You've probably heard of them. First of all, the spikes issue. Let me tell you a little more on how that played out. Pam Erickson did find the product, called me and said, "What is this stuff?" And when she described it to me, I was aghast. I called the folks who were distributing it, and I said, "Was there any thought process that went into this prior to the time that it went out to the markets?" They immediately started calling the brewery, and basically the decision was made. I got a phone call today that the largest distributor, and he was calling all the rest. I cannot call all the distributors to tell them to sell or not sell a particular product. It's a minor antitrust violation, so I stay out of that stuff, not wanting to get in too much trouble. The product is being pulled from the off-premise market. I can't explain it. It's one of those where when you look back at it, you go, was anybody thinking about where this thing might show up? But what it,
and I would submit to you that they sure did.
I mean,
I can't imagine that this is an accident of marketing.
And that's the problem. What happens is you get a brewery that ships you the product and says, "This is our newest product. You will put it out." You are contractually bound to do that. Because you have an independent wholesaler in the state, you are able to say to that brewery, you do have independence from them, you're not going to lose your franchise, basically, if you say to them, "No, I'm not going to do that." That breakdown, where do you do that? And unfortunately, it didn't occur before the product went out in the market, but it did occur after some of us started questioning whether the product should have been in the market. So at least the response was there. We have a very good working relationship with the Oregon Partnership, where they will call us and then we will try and intervene on stuff. This is not the first time that a really dumb marketing decision has gone by a wholesaler, where we ran into a situation years ago where a very high-test malt liquor put out a bunch of posters out. They were wonderful-looking posters. They showed guys, African-American guys in beautiful colored clothing with their hands in different ways and stuff. They were gang posters, basically, that some marketing genius in San Francisco had come up with. And we went out and put them up in the different places. Nobody knew what they were. And as soon as we found out what they were, we went around and just pulled them down really quickly. So we try and do that. As far as the drinking age, I told Ms. Cushing I was going to explain her statement. All states have a 21-year-old drinking age. There are provinces of Canada that are less, but in the United States, everybody is 21 years old. Wholesalers survive best when the market is cleanest. And that's why we support the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. We've always been very supportive of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And I'm going to do something that you usually won't see a group doing. I'm going to come to you and ask you to cost us more, to give them more. What we would propose is in House Bill 2171, which the agency basically drafted, which is increase our fees. A few years ago, you took away the licensing. We didn't have to license our salespeople anymore, which was a chunk of change out there. There's money out there. Increase our costs. We'd be happy to put it in there for them to do more enforcement of the laws, because we are in a dilemma. If the laws are not being enforced, then only the good people try and comply with the laws, and they are at a competitive disadvantage. So then they keep getting pushed back to not comply with the laws. So if you're going to have a law on the books, you need the enforcement people, and we are ready to step up to the table. I commend you to take a look at 2171 or some variation thereof and get the people who are selling the product under OLCC control and charge us. We're the ones who would be paying it. The wholesaler, we're not asking for other people to pay it. We are asking for us to pay it. So we would commend that to you. Clean market is the reason that you have a vibrant brewing industry in the state and a vibrant wine industry in the state. They have had, and they will tell you to a person, that they have been able to break into the market and do well in the market because the market's clean. It's not one where people in other places where you have, in effect, buying of a retail shop or some kind of tie-in. It's a very open, clean market. That's why you have the industry that you do today. We encourage you to keep the OLCC fully funded, increase their funding. They're a great agency to work with. I've had the privilege of working with them from the time I was in the Attorney General's office all the way through, which is about 100 years ago, all the way through now. I'm almost as old as Senator Monroe, not quite. You know, we may have disagreements on certain things and stuff, but they really are a pleasant agency to deal with, and we highly commend, fully fund them, and, in fact, give them more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Romaine. Any questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Romaine, so these kinds of things, this is not going to be the last one we're going to see. So is there anything that your organization can do to preclude more products like this coming out? In Oregon, at least.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, we do our best to try and tell independent business people to be smart about some of the stuff, to question some of the things. But it is very difficult to do that on a regular basis. We are not in a position where we can censor a particular product. I don't know if the OLCC... Do you have product approval? So did this product get by you?
Okay. I'm going to invite...
Well, I mean, that's really... it goes to the Liquor Control Commission. It should go through the Liquor Control to at least know about it. I have a very difficult time. We have a great organization, and people want to comply with the law, but it's very difficult for me to tell an independent business person, don't sell something that their brewery or winery wants them to sell. But if we have, when we do work with the OLCC, it's very easy for us to say, this is really stupid. You're going to get in trouble. Watch the publicity on this. I think I would get this out of the market if I were you. And then whammo, it happens. So we'll work with it.
Follow-up representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've been hearing some of the testimony about some of us having concern about underage people buying products. So, and you also heard Mary Bakken talking about training. So do you have any opinion about training staff at grocery stores or the corner little A, and what do you call them, the 24-hour place?
Convenience stores.
Convenience stores. And also having more stringent fines or responses to when they do sell to underage drinkers?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, I do. I'm going to put a little different hat on right now. I raised a few kids, one of whom you see periodically around this building, and one of their friends, the mother actually, when they turned, went away to college, the mother took them down to get a fake ID, actually brought them down to DMV and provided some false testimony or something to get, in effect, a driver's license. There's a culture out there that somehow believes that it's cute to kind of avoid these things, that they really don't mean anything. So that's part of the cultural problem you have out there. Training at the grocery level is different than training at the restaurant level. Restaurants, you can train to what's a sign of somebody being drunk, things like that. Training to determine whether somebody is over 21 is probably a little more difficult. We provide free of charge to any retailer who wants, we being the beer companies, will provide ID books. They're updated annually. They're very good, and they will give you pictures of all the legit ID in all the different states, because somebody comes into Safeway and has a Maryland ID. How are they supposed to know? Well, if they have an ID book at that register, they can at least look and check it out if there's any question. The problem with kids today, though, I mean, can you tell if somebody's 26? Can I tell if somebody's 26? I mean, it's almost impossible. It's a very, very difficult thing, underage, especially when the ID is fairly legitimate. So I'm not sure how much training would go. From our standpoint, it's fine. You're not going to affect the wholesaler in that particular thing. When we sell, it's a dock sale. It's generally a pretty large quantity, and we have to do all types of paperwork, and so we generally don't really run into too many situations where we're selling to somebody under 21. Unfortunately, somebody takes the stuff away and has a party for people under 21, but that's a different issue.
Thanks. Senator Woodson.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Paul, had HB 2171 been in effect during this last biennium, how much revenue would it have raised?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I don't know how much. I know OLCC was talking when we were discussing about the addition of four additional enforcement people, which is significant, but I don't know if that was reflected in that particular bill. Pardon?
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Romaine? Senator Monroe.
Yeah, Paul. I've seen, I spent 20 years on the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUI, so I've worked on these issues a lot during my life. And from the surveys that I've seen, first of all, selling to minors is very rare in the Greenfront stores. Mm-hmm. It's quite rare in the big chain groceries like Safeway. They do a pretty good job, usually. But it's happens all the time at the little convenience stores. That's where the biggest problem is. And of course, those are people that make their income almost exclusively from alcohol, tobacco, and lottery. So they're the ones that are selling. I mean, the percentage of the total that they sell is a much higher rate is alcohol than your Safeway store or your other big chain stores. And yet they seem to be the most difficult for us to get compliance from. Do you have any ideas on how we could improve that situation? Because I know that's where the bulk of the problem is.
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, the problem is, in that particular industry, and again, this is me not talking as beer and wine distributor lobbyist, but just outside observer. There's a lot of that's kind of the place that a lot of new people go to. People, when they're first getting into business and stuff, you get a lot of folks who go into that line. You get a lot of immigrants in that. You got a lot of people with that. That's the first thing they've stepped up to, basically. I sometimes people don't look at it. The compliance is much. They're more interested in actually making the sale and feeding the family. So it's different when you have a big company versus a small company and you need the money. That's no excuse for it. It's a bad thing to sell, but I think it's a very difficult problem to get your hands on. It's, but, you know, again, I wish I had a solution. I'd be much more helpful. I'm not very helpful in it.
I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and move us along. Ms. Stewart is going to come up, and Mr. Farrow, I'm going to invite your closing comments, if you care to make them, on the study, on staffing, on product approval, and training.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Romain. Ms. Stewart.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, greetings. I am Mary Stewart, the brand new Executive Director for Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Welcome.
Thank you. Operating out of the Portland area, and I look forward to working with you and being of assistance to you in any way that I can be. My testimony today is in support of the OLCC budget. Alcohol-impaired driving is the nation's most frequently committed violent crime. Approximately 1.4 million drivers were arrested in 2004 for DUII, and that's an arrest rate of one in every 139 licensed drivers in the United States, according to NHTSA, in 2006. In Oregon, in 2005, there were 23,257 DUII arrests, and that's a number in spite of the fact that there was a pared-down law enforcement set of officers on the road. Nearly 17,000 people are killed, and about a half million others are injured annually in alcohol-related traffic crashes. In Oregon, in 2005, 177 were killed. About 500 were injured, and by the time you factor in the impact on families, businesses, communities, it's almost immeasurable. Now, Mothers Against Drunk Driving is working towards a nation without drunk driving. And we envision doing that with several initiatives. No one action will make this happen. So we really do support high visibility and frequent law enforcement and the control commission efforts. We support the maximum implementation of ignition interlocks on offenders' vehicles and the development of additional advanced technologies, which are coming along and are really quite exciting. We also are working on the initiative of improving DUII criminal justice system performance and accountability, and also grassroots mobility. Drunk driving crashes are not accidents. Drunk driving is a choice and a crime that's 100% preventable. The OLCC is a vital player in our efforts to eliminate drunk driving. Through OLCC's work, servers and establishments...
We're getting signals from the staff. Could you pull the microphone up in front of your computer? Thank you.
I am so sorry. Is that coming through better? Okay, good. Well, I started to say, drunk driving crashes are not accidents. And through the OLCC's work, servers and establishment owners are educated on how to recognize underage customers and those who should not be served additional alcohol. Their liquor stores keep really more control on how to, you know, recognize underage drinking. So that doesn't happen as much.
And also, the liquor stores, their patrols enforce the laws that are currently on the books. It's really in the best interest of Oregonians for the OLCC to remain strong and to grow its scope of service as the population and the demand increases. We support the budget for OLCC, including staffing for inspectors and others, to address the increasing population that we're experiencing and the resulting increasing demand. Thank you for your time, and of course I do stand ready to assist you with any additional information that you need.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stewart. Okay. Staff is handing out some testimony for your files, colleagues, and while I'm personally disconsolate that Mr. Perry won't be offering lengthy testimony, we are at the end of our sign-in list, and I'm going to invite Mr. Farrow to come up and just make some concluding comments on anything that he's heard, with particular emphasis, Mr. Farrow, if you don't mind, on the status of the study. Any comments you'd make about training? I saw you and Ms. Ignowski commenting about product approval. If you could hit those, that'd be great.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. The first thing I would like to comment on, there was some questions raised about staff keeping up with growth. Just want to clarify that since 1993, the public safety program has lost 15 FTE from its current staffing level. So just want to make sure that's clear. The agent's comp study, as it's referred to, has taken an unfortunate journey of being delayed. The previous administration was taking this study down a path that would have not have fulfilled the budget note. It would not have been independent enough. With the exit of that administration, we very quickly ramped up to go ahead and put the study in play, to gather information, to meet with the agents, to go ahead and do the research that we needed to do. We pushed it along as quickly as we could. You have to go ahead and still follow the procedures with regards to putting out the bids. We did all those things. There were many individuals that thought $500,000 was way too much and that we didn't need to spend $500,000 for it. And while that may be true, the reality of it was once it went out for bid, because of the tight timeline, we only had two bidders. I'm sorry, the first time, we actually had no bidders, because of the tight time. So the $500,000 wasn't very inspirational, be frank about it. Then what we did was go ahead and take the second opportunity. We extended that timeline into, I believe it was April, to go ahead and give them more time. At that point, we did have two bidders on the project, or for the study. We did award that. We're in the process of awarding or trying to award it to a major consultant firm who at the last minute backed out. Then with that, we then went into renegotiations with the second bidder, and it looked like things were going to work out, and at the last minute, they backed out. They still felt that the time constraint was too much. So where we ended up, now we're looking at mid to early April to have the results in, except nobody's taken the bait. So now we go, okay, what are we going to do? So the next thing we could do was go back to those companies and say, if we gave you a longer time frame, would you take the study? And we had to end up going to late May, mid-June in order to go ahead and get somebody to take the study. I will reassure the committee that the commission is absolutely committed to the study. We want to see the results as much as anyone else does. This has been controversial for many years. We would like to go ahead and make sure that it's out there in black and white so everybody can see the numbers. The basis of how we're trying to construct the study is to base it in terms of geography and in terms of demographics as much as possible within the state of Oregon, because there are so many varying degrees in terms of population, demographics, sales opportunities, products that are bought. We sought to standardize as much as we could within that process to go ahead and make it a fair and equitable way to see that where the agents are getting paid, and how does it rate for the area they're in, the size of their sales, et cetera. There's a number of different factors. And we would be happy to supply you with a copy of the study.
I think it might be very useful if you had any comments that spoke to scope, because I know one of the debates that has roiled in this building previously was whether or not you would count gross sales, including cigarettes and sort of liquor accoutrement, olives and soda waters and stuff like that. Not that I've ever been in a liquor store. I'm relying totally on reading that I've done of the literature of the bank. But if you could provide us with some scope, that might be very helpful.
Madam Chair, absolutely. The budget note was very clear that it was to include sales, all sales from that location. So it would include mixers, it would include tobacco, et cetera. So everything would be covered in scope.
Senator Verger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that you can sympathize, however, with the agents who in 2005 had at least some movement forward, and then you're looking at record year sales, and they're not changing anything at all as far as percentage.
Madam Chair, Senator Verger, I certainly empathize with them in the fact that we want to get to the facts in terms of what their compensation is relative to what their sales are and their cost. Absolutely. So I can understand what you're saying in terms of thinking that things are moving forward, then stumbling and stopping and now trying to get started again. Absolutely. Once again, the Commission has every bit of interest and desire to see this all move as quickly as possible to get the definitive information. I've been there for 12 years. This has been controversial long before I got there, and right. We definitely want to go ahead and deal with it. Right. So the study at this point, we do have the vendor signature on the contract. We are targeting at this point the initial feed for 29th of May, right? The initial report will come out around the 29th of May, and the final report, I think, is the 12th of June. And we will do whatever we can to speed that up. We feel we have a very good vendor that will be working with the agents and us. And I will tell you that there is going to be very deep involvement by the agents in this study as far as gathering information, and they certainly were deeply involved in helping write the study itself in terms of the criteria and the basis for it. So we're very open and very transparent about that. If there's any other questions about the study, I'd be happy to try and answer them now.
Representative Edwards, we have 5 minutes.
Quick question. What's the primary methodology?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, the way we sort of constructed it was to take a look at within the area. So if you have a store, and within that city, town, wherever it may be, we look at the surrounding area. And so if the store is 1,000 square feet, and all the surrounding stores are 1,000 square feet, in relative comparison in terms of size of business, et cetera, that gives us a basis to go ahead and determine their cost, where it falls in line with the surrounding area, and then based upon that, we can see their compensation. So if their compensation is within a reasonable basis for that, we can see relative to their cost within the area that can supply the real estate that it's okay. And by the same token, you can go on the opposite end. If they've got a 3,000-square-foot store and all the stores around them are 500-square-foot, then it shows us a little out of balance, and vice versa on the other end.
I forgot we had an expert on this kind of issue. Maybe if Mr. Farrell could provide you a copy of the RFP, that might be useful.
That would be helpful. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Representative Gilman. Okay. Any comments on training?
I would just go ahead. I've got the product real quickly. On the products that you saw that you have there before you, years ago the Commission used to do label approval of everything that came into the state. So this would have come before us at that point, and we could have given it a thumbs down. Years ago, the Commission stopped doing that, so basically the products can come into the state, and as we catch them, so to speak, we are able to go ahead and deal with them. If we do go ahead and feel that it's not in the best interest, the rules read basically that any product that is clearly marketed or made for to attract underage, we can ban, and we have banned products, as Director Ignowski already commented on.
When you ban it, is it a recall, or are the stores allowed to sell the product out and then they just don't restock?
I think Madam Chair, I think basically they're allowed to sell through at that point and then move on.
I would call Mr. Romaine up for any additional elucidation.
On this particular product.
Identify yourself, please, Mr. Romaine, and speak into the microphone.
It's very long.
I know.
I'm Paul Romaine, representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. Madam Chair, on this particular product,
I told our folks to just go ahead and buy it back, which is actually illegal. We then called the OLCC and...
In the back is getting this.
Okay, I'm getting used to this. Basically, we said, just buy it back. And then the OLCC actually accommodated us. They're actually writing a letter saying we're waiving that. The retailer should not be stuck with a really stupid decision to put this stuff out there. So we're buying it back. We also said to them that if you did get a ticket for buying it back, it would probably be the best ticket you ever got. But so
as long as you're still up there, why was some of it in glass bottles and some in plastic?
I have, Madam Chair, I have absolutely no idea. I could make another snide remark, but I'm not, because that gets me into another subject matter I just did not get into.
Moving right along, Mr. Farrell, you got...
How would you know what it is or how much alcohol it had in it? Because, I mean, without a magnifying glass to read it.
Respectfully, Senator Verger, my good friend and my good colleague, somebody who's 15 can read this. We can't.
Oh. All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Mr. Farrell, you now have 1 minute.
Madam Chair, with regards to education, we certainly support education in terms of our server ed program. We are trying to make modifications in that as appropriate. We are looking at the possibility of online server ed. So that is out there. The issue of education for clerks in stores has come up. It is certainly something that can be looked at. There are a number of issues in support of it. I'm sure there are a number of folks that really don't want to have it take place. But we can certainly take a look at something like that.
Who would not want to have available education in the most expeditious and both in terms of time and money? Who would not want that other than people training, selling training?
Madam Chair, committee members, perhaps a misstatement. There would be some that see the involvement in that training as an additional expense and perhaps may not want that additional expense. But I do not have anyone in particular that might be.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, if I might. You know, in our society, we treat driving as a privilege, and we treat drinking as a right that you have absolute right to do. We should perhaps think about what would happen if we treated drinking as a privilege that could be revoked.
I think it's on that note, unless you're just burning
just,
up.
Just
Senator
one,
Monroe.
One quick point. Do you have the authority, if you catch a convenience store selling the minor, do you have the authority as part of the penalty to require all of their staff to be trained?
Quickly, I'm Linda Ignowski, Chairman and Senator Monroe. There is a requirement on the books called clerk training that anyone who is caught selling to a minor before they can continue to start selling have to take a training class before they can go back to selling alcohol. So that is a statute that's been on the books for clerk training.
So just be the one clerk, you wouldn't make them train all of their staff?
Chairman, Senator Moore, it isn't a requirement. But we offer the training for the entire staff if that's something that they want to do.
Yeah, do it a little tougher.
Two administrative comments, and then we're going to adjourn. The first one is, colleagues, tomorrow we'll be delving into the PUC. And we are tentatively, and this is subject to change, we are tentatively planning to do a work session on this budget on February the 21st. And I just want to remind us all that in the work sessions, we are a budget committee, not a policy committee. We'll be dealing with their fiscal situation, not many of the other policy questions. And with that, Mr. Farrow, thank you very much, Ms. Ignowski. And unless there is objection, I see none. We are adjourned.